Have you ever wished that you had a direct line to your pediatrician to ask all the questions that constantly crop up while parenting? We sure have. That's why we launched the Bites of Health podcast. Every morning, we'll answer a commonly asked pediatric question in 5 minutes or less. You can tune in while you're making your second cup of coffee or from the school drop-off line. So be sure to tune in to Bites of Health, streaming now.
Do you find it hard to sleep at night? Then the Sleep Cove podcast can help you. Hi, I'm Christopher Fitton, the voice and clinical hypnotherapist behind Sleep Cove. Sleep Cove features sleep hypnosis, meditations, and bedtime stories, all designed to help those of you who struggle at night to achieve a restful and peaceful night's sleep. Search for Sleep Cove on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and see why Sleep Cove helps millions of people sleep deeply all night long.
Hello, welcome to the show. This is Emotional Badass, where Moxie meets Mindful. I'm Nikki Eisenhower, your host, life coach, and psychotherapist. And on today's episode, I'm discussing how grooming and childhood sexual abuse can happen. Hello, y'all. This isn't one for the kiddos to overhear, so I just want to start the episode with that. When I first decided that I would go public with my story, someone in my life said, "The world isn't ready for the word incest." And I fired back something quickly like, "Yeah, neither was I." Incest and child abuse are things we'd rather not speak about in polite society. I understand that sentiment. And I also understand that talking about it, raising awareness, is how we actually impact this massive problem that changes who children are for the whole rest of their lives. Maybe you've noticed recent headlines centering on child abuse and incest. The Atlantic released an article entitled, "DNA Tests Are Uncovering the True Prevalence of Incest." This article is written by Sarah Zhang, Z-H-A-N-G. We'll link to it in the show notes. You may have also seen there's a new documentary about Nickelodeon called Quiet on Set. This documentary is exposing a highly inappropriate atmosphere for the child stars that were on Nickelodeon through the 90s and 2000s. It's currently streaming on HBO Max, Apple TV, and some other streaming services. The documentary highlights the criminal case of a male star who was sexually abused by someone on the set who was later hired by Disney after serving time for these crimes. Maybe you've seen the video of a very young, underage Ariana Grande on her pink and fluffy sitcom set on her bed as a child handling a potato like a sexual organ in porn. There are allegations that one of the main showrunners on Nickelodeon, who was on many shows around all of the child stars, often had an underage child or an adult employee giving him massages on set. Maybe you've seen the plethora of sexual allegations against Diddy, also known as Puffy. His real name is Sean Combs. He's a rapper and a music mogul, highly involved in developing the careers of Usher and Justin Bieber when they were underage. There's definite footage online from both of these stars from their youth implying sexual and inappropriate environments for minors that they were in and in regularly. Maybe you've seen the list of stars who've written support letters for adult perpetrators who wind up in court, accused of inappropriate and abusive acts with children, and scratched your head. How could people write support letters for that? Maybe you've wondered, how does this happen? How does this keep continuing to happen? There's not a one of us who hasn't known that child stars are at risk for child sexual abuse, and yet it seems to keep happening and keep happening. We live with a convenient and comfortable denial about the prevalence of perpetrators among us. How do we eradicate this abuse if it means catching perpetrators that we're close with in communities? Perpetrators are people in our families, people that we live with, people that we depend on. When abusers are caught, they're often parents, like in my situation. They can be bosses, they can be church clergy, they can be community elders, teachers, anyone that has access to kids. And what an uncomfortable thing for me to say out loud, because so many people are drawn to work with kids for all of the right reasons. And yet many are drawn to work with kids for all of the wrong reasons too. We believe in science that is studying pedophilia, studying sexual attraction to children. We believe that human beings have a brain mechanism that blocks naturally our normal, healthy sexual desires that would show up from an adult towards another adult, that there is a blocking mechanism inside of a healthy human that makes sexual desire toward children and close family wrong, icky. It turns us off. We believe that this is to ensure biodiversity in offspring. It's to ensure a tribal human protection of children beyond the immediate family members. We are biologically wired to be tribal. Part of that is that child-free people or parents of children will often protect other children in the tribe. When people say it takes a village to raise a child, everyone is part of that village, whether you think of yourself as part of that village or not. We are all part of that village. Every single adult that was around those Nickelodeon sets, those were part of the tribe for all of those kids. I can attest as a child-free woman that any small child, any kid that comes into my sphere, I feel a motherly, maternal, protective instinct. That doesn't come from a thought that tells me I should be in that role. That comes from a different place in me. It comes from an instinct. It comes from my DNA. It comes from my biological wiring. It's believed that this natural and biological drive to protect children and be totally non-sexual with them, that this is a mechanism that is just not turned on in a pedophile. It's just not turned on and activated in that healthy way for anyone who finds themselves sexually attracted to a child. There may be frontal lobe differences in people with such an affliction. There are many people who may feel a desire for sex with a child, who never ever cross a line, who never harm a child. And there are others who hurt and will hurt many, many, many children. In the 80s and 90s, it was believed in law enforcement that we were honing in on child sexual predators because it was very difficult to make, to print, to acquire child porn before the internet. It was very dangerous to attain that kind of material and connect yourself with those kinds of people. It was also very difficult and dangerous to connect with other abusers or other enablers of child abuse. And law enforcement, the powers that be, throughout the world, basically, were hopeful that they were closing in, that they were close to eliminating child pornographers, that we were really close through the 80s and early 90s to reducing, if not eliminating, the kind of material, the kind of pictures, the kind of videos that promote and propagate child sexual abuse. Now, law enforcement, research from that time, really believed that they had a handle on this problem in the human condition, on this problem in society. Now, I will intuitively disagree that it was anywhere close to being handled. I expect, though I can't stand hate, don't want this to be true, but I expect pedophilia to always be a part of the human condition. Just like people getting physically abusive with one another will never, ever be completely out of the population. I don't care what we study. I don't care what science says. I don't care what we know as collective knowledge. emotional intelligence, and wellness, there will always be people that just act on their impulses, act on their desires, no matter the detrimental outcome for the other person, even for themselves. I don't believe that there will ever be an elimination of this sexually deviant proclivity. And we have to know that as a people who have in our hearts protecting children. In 1975, I was born in 1980, y'all. I'm in my 40s. In 1975, before I was born, psychiatry believed that incest was a literal one in a million. Even when I went through school, I had professors that would tell me I would only really see one really awful, terrible abuse case, that those cases weren't prevalent. That's just not true. I have had more cases that would blow your mind, that you would think would have to make national news, that have never made national news, that are the worst of the worst that you can imagine. I have absolutely lost count. Dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of people I've seen in my career would fit such a description of such abuse. Now, based on current DNA collected, the article that will be in the show notes that I referenced from the Atlantic, based on current DNA collected science from a geneticist named Jim Wilson at the University of Edinburgh, found that 1 in 7,000 people are born to first-degree relatives. That means that the fathers of these pregnancies were the mother's father or the mother's brother. And this is powerful data. Why? Because this is the lowest estimation that this data can produce. Because certainly abuse happens without pregnancy. And I myself have worked with many, many, many survivors whose own abuser took them to get the abortion of their own offspring, sometimes multiple abortions. If you don't know already, let me tell you that there are pedophile advocacy organizations in the world. Some of them national, some of them international. Some of them have closed, some of them continue to open and propagate and spread. Many of these organizations were founded in the 1960s as part of the sexual revolution. I'll list some for you. The Childhood Sensuality Circle was founded in 1971 in San Diego. The Rene Guyon, I'm not sure I'm saying that right, G-U-Y-O-N Society, their motto was sex before eight or it's too late. And the one that is still in action today, the North American Man-Boy Love Association. They've been around since 1978. The UK had PAL, P-A-L, the Pedophile Action for Liberation Group. The UK also had PIE, P-I-E, Pedophile Information Exchange, till 1984. And IPCE, the International Pedophile and Child Emancipation Group. I could go on and on. The numbers in these groups have dwindled, which at first seems like awesome news. But in these past decades, as these numbers, these memberships to these organizations dwindled, they just traded up and out of these organizations because these organizations were real-life, in-person organizations. Those organizations have been traded for online anonymity, where pedophiles can go all from all over the world. They can sit in front of a computer from the safety and comfort of their homes and go all over the world. And in a flash, they can disappear out of any forum, any chat room, at their convenience. Of course, this abuse that is happening from people's office chairs and home sofas while they're on computers, it doesn't stay on the screen. It tends to move from screens to real-life victims with a regularity that we don't understand the statistics of, the numbers of. The internet gave technological access and cover and allowed more people to view images of child porn, which fuels ideas of child abuse. Now, I am not a supporter of the idea that giving outlet to child abusers by, let's say, giving them a child-sized sex doll to work out their urges on, on a non-living, non-human, I am not for this idea because I don't believe that this protects any real child. This does not protect any real children because sexual deviance is like addiction. What worked last month doesn't cut it anymore. What worked yesterday doesn't cut it anymore today. You need more and more and more and more to achieve the same kind of high. Abusers feel high when abusing, y'all. This is what drives continued abuse and reoffending after legal and life consequences. There's something very addictive about this kind of abuse. We have said that addiction is progressive. That's what you'll hear if you hang out with addiction professionals. Addiction is progressive. And that means that the desires grow stronger and stronger without psychological intervention, without intentional change, without intentional reframing, emotional and physical boundaries, without a rigorous self-honesty and accountability as practice. To give pedophiles outlet is to strengthen their associated desires, not weaken or minimize them. It is a likely gamble that such a pedophile will in fact escalate to real live impacted children over substitutes like dolls or imagery.
Hi, everyone. It's Jean Chatsky, host of the Her Money podcast. For 7 years, my show has been changing the relationships women have with money because make no mistake, when it comes to money, women are different. We face challenges that men don't. Longer lifespans, caregiving, a gender pay gap that just won't quit. Oh, and the fact that the financial industry was built by men for men. We need information specifically for us presented without jargon in a judgment-free zone. And that's what the Her Money podcast is all about. Every week, we talk about earning more, spending smart, investing to build the life you want, and protecting yourself from disaster. Subscribe to Her Money with Jean Chatsky wherever you get your podcasts. Because when you own your money, you own your life.
It is my belief that to be able to sexually abuse a child, one is afflicted with low to no empathy and low to no personal responsibility. I believe that this fuels rates of recidivism, which just means the propensity to reoffend, and all data indicates that no real change is available in this population that offends towards children. Now, I would be interested in studies on empathy as it relates to restraint versus perpetration in those finding themselves attracted to children, because those who do not offend likely have more empathy, more personal responsibility, more connection through that empathy to what that act would do to that child, therefore they restrain themselves. Those who offend and just reoffend and reoffend and reoffend can't reoffend if you have high empathy. You're too connected to the consequences for other people. You feel it. It hurts you. Empathy is about being able to sort of equalize the experience and understand how someone else may feel, what that impact may be. So if our empathy is high, often our maturity is high, often our personal responsibility is high, and these are the things that will not allow us to hurt another. I suspect it is a lot of people attracted to children in our culture. I don't like saying that out loud. Ew. But we can see that incest porn stats are on the rise. And a small percentage of this group that is on the rise will decide to up the ante in true progressive addiction form. Some will act out. Some will escalate in behavior, whether that means upping the abuse, increasing behaviors on one or few victims, or acquiring more and more and more victims, or both. We don't deal with manipulation very well at the level of individual or society, do we? If we dealt with manipulation, our politics would be different. The way we do business would be different. The way we relate to one another We'd be more honest when someone says, hey, how do I look in this outfit? We wouldn't cringe to that question. We would just flow with honesty. We would say what we really thought. We would say what we meant with a vigor, with an honesty, with a clarity. We don't even really understand how advertisements are manipulations. If you're a longtime listener of the show, you know I don't do any hard sales strategies. Why? Because it's manipulative to make you think that you are going to somehow hurt yourself if you don't buy into needing the thing that I'm offering. I don't like that. You'll never hear me market or advertise. What I do is an offering. Hey, this is what I'm doing. Do you want to come do this? This is how I make a living. Yes, I help people. And that's it. We don't deal with manipulation very well in our society, not even with our children. When our children, if I take a sip of my water, if there's a child that goes, oh, that drink looks good, that child's being manipulative. She's trying to insinuate that she might like a sip of my drink, and she very much would like me to offer her that instead of her being able to say, I'm thirsty, or that looks delicious. May I have a sip? There are so many levels and layers to how we do not deal with manipulation in this culture very well. What's strikingly difficult for any survivor of prolonged grooming and childhood sexual abuse is having to realize from an adult place, how many people saw red flags, saw signs in real life, in real time, and chose not to rock the boat, not to be the squeaky wheel, or not to endanger an opportunity. To those now adult people who were kids at Nickelodeon, I want to say that I'm so sorry that the norm is that so many adults see what is happening and do not act. I do not have to wait for rain to fall out of the sky and hit my face before I'm aware a storm is coming, before I go inside to get out of the impending rain. I can see the clouds moving in. I can feel the air shift. I know a storm is coming. When it comes to childhood sexual abuse, it's as if many adults who would never harm a child themselves choose to ignore the storm that's brewing all around them. The storm that they see, the storm that they hear, and the storm that they sense coming in. And they do not act until the rain is on their face or they're soaking wet. They don't act till the sky is full of rumbling thunder and lightning is cracking and striking the ground. They don't act until that child comes out and articulates the trauma, the crime that has been happening to them. This is soul crushing for survivors. I can't count how many people said to me at the age of 23 when my abuse secret came to light that they had suspicions that my father was abusing us. And they did nothing because they didn't want to overstep. They didn't want to be rude. They didn't want to be nosy. Take in what that means about how our society works, y'all. That what is normalized in our society is that we ignore signs and call it being polite. We tell ourselves that shutting up, turning a blind eye, is kindly minding our own business. We pat ourselves on the back for pretending we didn't observe exactly what we did. In this way, child sexual abuse is a societal problem. I hope this episode empowers you to be a light in the storm for any child lost in darkness. And let me tell you that the light holders, the light shiners, they are not the sheep in our society. And the uncomfortable question we can ask ourselves if we care about being part of the solution here is, am I a sheep or am I a lion? Will I be a sheep or will I be a lion? Who do you want to be when it comes to protecting our collective children? There is the bystander effect. It's also known as bystander apathy. This has been studied all kinds of ways in psychology. It's a settled science. This simply means that the more people that surround someone in distress, the less likely people are to step up and do something. It's as if our collective psychology decided somewhere along the way, hey, there's a lot of people around here. Somebody else can do it. I'll pass the buck. I'm not getting left with the hot potato. You do it. It's a practice of apathy, a practice of, I don't want this to be my responsibility. This was shocking for me to learn in graduate school, y'all, because I realized that from both my nature and my nurture, I am not such a bystander. It's part of what makes me different from other people, and I'm wondering if it makes you different than other people too. Or I wonder if you would like to be different in this way. All of my life, I have found myself stepping in to help, even if surrounded by other people who couldn't or wouldn't. I don't stand back and wait for others to step in and do the right thing. Maybe that's who I was always meant to be from the moment I was born. Maybe this is my correction for my own inner child who held a lot of pain for a long time about what adults did not do to help me when they saw, when their guts knew better than their politeness. These are leadership qualities. Now, I don't possess every leadership quality, but I possess this one. I am not a sheep, and I do not follow any crowd or wait for a crowd to act. I act how I would want someone to act for me if I were in distress. The bystander effect says that I'm the outlier here, and the average human will not step in. This is in part why this abuse continues decade after decade after decade after decade. This is what explains what happened at Nickelodeon. So many adults knew in their guts, they knew in their hearts, and yes, even in their logical mind, and yet they went full sheep. Sure, they feel sorry and they feel regretful. They feel guilty and shameful. And yes, hindsight is most certainly 20/20. But I hope those adults involved and the kids who are now adults facing their healing, that the decision made from growth is to never, ever, ever again dismiss what is important for fear of rocking a boat. If we take the bystander effect and add that our society seems to have thrown out any kind of value to our gut wisdom, we have absolutely dismissed common sense. We've dismissed acting from instinct. We are in quite the pickle when it comes to dealing with childhood sexual abuse. We are such a factual, intellectualizing society that what is normal now is to feel activated, to sense that something is wrong, to feel stirred up emotionally, and go to our heads and do almost nothing. Watch the Nickelodeon documentary and watch that father who trusted his instincts. There was a father who just saw it. He was, like I'm describing myself to you in this episode, naturally not the sheep. He was the lion. He pegged the abusers. And that abuser knew that that man pegged him, and he worked his son to find a wedge and create a wedge, wedge it in between he and his son. Because that abuser knew that the mother was checked out. As the father was pushed to the side, no longer allowed to go to the studios to protect his son, his child, he warned his ex-wife to never let their son be around the man that he pegged. Begged her, reiterated it, to never let their child be alone with that man. And this would be the very man who would eventually perpetrate the worst things you can think of when it comes to sexual abuse on his son. And it derailed his son's life.
Do you find it hard to sleep at night? Then the Calm Cove podcast can help you sleep deeply all night long. Calm Cove has deeply relaxing meditation music and ambient sounds, like ocean waves and crackling fires. All of our episodes are designed to help you relax and to fall asleep fast. Calm Cove is brought to you by the team behind Sleep Cove, the sleep podcast that consists of spoken word hypnosis, meditation, and stories. So if you want to listen to a beautiful soundscape tonight, search for Calm Cove on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and see how we're helping millions of people relax and go to sleep every night.
I wish that was an outlier of a story. I wasn't a Hollywood kid. I was in Southern Louisiana. But in a smaller way, this is what happened in my life too. My dad was in the court system for divorcing the wife that was before my mom. He was accused of molesting his children with her. That woman warned my mother. I can still remember going to visit his children while he was under court-appointed supervision, with the supervisor looking at my mother and three little girls like her head was going to explode. Even she didn't report to CPS for us, the person assigned to protect the other children. My father was immediately upon entering our lives allowed to take over the bedtime routine for three little girls under 9 years old. If we aren't teaching people to trust their guts, then abuse continues because most predators aren't going to incriminate themselves by performing the very abusive acts in front of other adults' eyes or ears. If we also factor in that, like my mom, many parents have low to no empathy. Society doesn't like this idea. It's uncomfortable. We prefer to imagine that all kids are loved and cherished, and that is as it should be. My mom handed me to an abuser. The real truth is because it was easy for her. She pawned off her parenting duties, like putting the kids to bed at night. She didn't want to interact with us. She was very disengaged. And he was very willing, as most people who want to hurt children are. Pedophiles are genius experts at finding children of disconnected, disconcerned, emotionally neglectful parenting. And they know how to artfully step right in, step right up to fill in those voids for that child. And as this relationship of grooming escalates, child sexual abuse is perpetrated. And what happens for the child is that the child is so terrified of the love and attention that has been garnered on them from the abuser that was filling that former deficit. They're so scared that that energy, that positivity, that attention will go away, that they don't speak up. They endure. They stay quiet. When the abuse isn't violent, it often feels good because our human bodies, our sexual bodies, and our sexual parts are made to feel good when they get touched. Some abusers very much know this. It is the crux of their strategy to control that child staying quiet. If that child has good feelings during the abuse, that becomes its own shame prison for the victim. That complicates the situation so much, that shutdown, sweeping the abuse under the rug, they feel like self-protection, even if and when the abuse continues. Often there is great stigma, there is great self-doubt, and even a self-loathing that happens from the victim's own judgments of themselves. When abuse starts early enough and young enough, it can often continue till teenage years or even through early adulthood. These kids can start driving. I've even seen some that were in their mid to late 20s, finally escaping houses of horror, so disgusted with themselves for being so old and for having stayed. It's like a Stockholm syndrome when you're born into an abusive family or you spend years and years and years in such dynamics that take over your thinking, that take over your psychology. Because the same people who hurt you, the same people who harmed you also feed you and clothe you. They also sometimes hug you and encourage you and support you in other ways. The complexity is enough for a child to drown in. I want to recommend two books by Gavin De Becker, The Gift of Fear, and the other is Protecting the Gift, Keeping Children and Teenagers Safe and Parents Sane. These books are about listening to your instincts and giving yourself permission to then act from that instinct and then to teach your children the same. To every lion who has ever spoken up for a child in good faith, thank you. You risked stigma. You risked judgment. You risked being wrong. You risked being shamed or ostracized, seen as overreacting or overly emotional. Thank you for taking those risks for a child. And if you are listening to this going, yikes, maybe I've been a sheep. To every sheep, I ask you to find your courage, to find your voice, to own your place in our human tribe by pledging with yourself or your higher power to never in your life sweep something under the rug that is nagging at your intuition. It simply cannot be put on the child to speak up through the complicated, confusing, traumatic experience of childhood sexual abuse. We must become a people willing to sense what we sense and deal with what we sense in the light of day. And we must take this on for the most vulnerable members of our tribe. To every survivor, I want you to know that your worth is unchanging. You are just as worthy right now and today as the precious day when you were born. When you want to give up, lean into your healing work. Do it for that version of you. Do it for that precious brand new baby you were. Do it because that baby deserves you giving healing and giving it your all. It's as simple as that. You can heal. I know it feels impossible at times. I know it feels hard. I know you question if your efforts are worth it. I promise you they are, even when it doesn't feel like it. Keep going forward. You are not responsible for what happened to you. Even if your young self thinks that he or she participated or seemed willing because your innocence was manipulated into doing so, it is not your fault. The hard truth is that because this happened to you, it is now your job to heal. Just like someone who is paralyzed in an accident. Just like someone who didn't want the divorce getting served with the divorce papers. Just like people who must clean up and restore their homes and their neighborhoods after a big hurricane. We are responsible for the quality of our lives, no matter what hardship happens. We are responsible for our healing. We are responsible for our forward motion. We are responsible for shedding and letting go of what no longer or never, ever did serve us. Victim mentality, in my book, is just not allowed. Your task is to process how you were victimized, then move to the next phase in healing, not get mired down in victim mentality, not to buy real estate in the victimhood where the property value plummets and there are no good views. It's true that it's not fair that you have to do the work now because someone else violated and betrayed you. But it is real and it is true that it is now your job to heal and to grow past, to grow beyond what has happened to you. And the faster you deal with owning your one precious life and growing into peace and healthy love and respect, the faster you thrive instead of surviving. You have spent enough time in survival mode. You are worthy of growing into thriving, and I promise you, you can, no matter how far away that feels. It's not out yet, but How to Heal After Childhood Sexual Abuse will be the Patreon episode in April. Come join us to get that episode when it drops. It will only be available on our Patreon and nowhere else. So come enjoy Patreon, ad-free now at the $5 level, and get your exclusive episode. Come find us at patreon.com/emotionalbadass. Thank you, Patreon supporters who have invested in us through Patreon. It helps us produce the show. Y'all are our backbone. Y'all are our support. And I am honored every time I get to sit with you in every live stream. Every time I get to release an episode that maybe is a little more personal in the corner of the internet that is our cozy little emotional badass Patreon. Some of you have been there since the beginning, and it is an honor. Thank you. The next topic for our live stream Q&A that's going to happen on the second Wednesday of the month is on a topic we've never done before. It's intention and attention, how to manage your energy. So sensitive people, my feely types, my empaths, come ask whatever question that will help you move forward on your path. You can join the Patreon today at patreon.com/emotionalbadass. All of the tiers on Patreon have a one-time free 7-day trial period. So come check us out, y'all. Emotional Badass is part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. I am an emotional badass. You are an emotional badass. And together, we are where moxie meets mindful. Light and love, and I'll see you right here for next week's episode or on the Patreon. Till then, bye-bye.
At a time when change is constant and we are pulled in far too many directions, we need a way to stay present to life and to increase our ability to remain calm, think clearly, and maintain our well-being. Many studies indicate mindfulness improves our mental, emotional, and physical health. On A Mindful Moment with Teresa McKee, you can learn how to practice mindfulness and enjoy its many benefits. Tune in for guided meditations and to hear tips and advice from some of the most respected experts in the fields of mental health and mindfulness. The world truly can be a better place. It all starts with a mindful moment.